The Public Accounts Committee heard from the Treasury Minister and some of his officers last week. During a lengthy session, topics included the structural deficit in government's budget, the sustainability of ever-increasing health spending, government pay, and the triple lock pension guarantee. Here are some highlights from the hearing.
I'm Duan Watson, Chair of the Committee, and with me are Mrs. Anne Court, Mr. Rob Mercer, Mr. Jason Morehouse, and the General Auditor General, Mr. Warren. Today we're meeting with the Treasury Minister, Chief Financial Officer, and Director of National Insurance. Minister, you arrived quite late into the budget process, it was well documented. To what extent were policy differences around the budget part of your appointment?
As announced in the press release at the time, two very important parts of my appointment were revisiting an important policy towards particularly the local economy, but more generally the whole economy, which is the minimum wage, slowing down the increase in the minimum wage, and that was the second part that was very much a focus of the press release, was that we were substituting a sort of complicated package of things like an NI youth initiative with a personal tax allowance, more substantial personal tax allowance at the time, as well documented. It was quite an important part.
What brief were you given by the Chief Minister in terms of direction?
That's not the way it works. With Chris Thomas or Ralph Cannon, we discussed, we worked out what we thought were the main issues that needed to be addressed. We talked about mutual frustrations, and then when I was appointed around 9:30 on that Monday morning, I did two things. First of all, I made sure I could have the earliest possible appointment with the Chief Financial Officer, and my recollection is that by about 11 o'clock I was with the Chief Financial Officer working out what would happen next, and we can go into that in more detail. And secondly, I tackled the legislative programme, because quite an important part of the preceding parliamentary sittings have been about the gambling regulation approach, and I wanted to catch up with the Gambling Supervision Commission. So I think I even met the Gambling Supervision Commission to talk about that legislation before I had the chance to meet the Chief Financial Officer to begin talking through what I wanted to do and what the Chief Minister wanted to do in terms of the budget.
Thank you. You've been very specific about it being you and the Chief Minister. Mm-hmm. Are the rest of the Council Ministers having input into the process?
You have to ask the Chief Minister about that. Obviously, I wasn't a member, hadn't attended my first Council Minister's meeting at that point, so I'm not sure I can tell you what might or might not have happened between the Chief Minister and his Council Ministers before I was appointed.
In terms of the budget, and that kind of being the priority for the coming days?
Well, no, it was the other way around. So at 11 o'clock, when I started talking to the Chief Financial Officer, you have to remember as well, the Tuesday that week was the Tynwald week, so we had to work out what was possible in terms of a timetable and in terms of making changes. So I think my recollection, and Mr. Randall Caldrick can correct me if it's different from his recollection, but my recollection was I had a meeting at lunchtime with some crucial people around the department for them to understand more about, you know, what my thinking was. And then on the first day of Tynwald, I think we came back at lunchtime for 24 hours of work to think through and cost out more about some of those options. And then we had the privilege to go to Treasury Board on the Wednesday morning, and then to Council Ministers on Thursday.
So between the Monday where you took the job and the Thursday, there was nothing involving the Council Ministers. But when you met on the Thursday, you were able to give them a idea of where you were going in terms of the budget alterations and the existing budget structure that you would retain.
Just isn't my recollection correct?
I believe so.
So that's I can't tell you what the Chief Minister was having with his ministers, because obviously the Chief Minister's main responsibility is to make sure they have the Council Ministers in place. So you'll have to talk to the Chief Minister and other ministers about discussion that might have been going on in Council Ministers beforehand or at the same time. But all I can say is it's quite a big challenge I set personally, the Treasury Department, and they exceeded my expectations about how many options they were able to deliver 24 hours later, and then to further explore some of those options, and then to go to Treasury Boards to begin to get political support, and then go to Council Ministers on the Thursday. One option I had was to delay the Tynwald members' presentation, which I think was scheduled from memory for about the 28th of January. That was perhaps a recommendation that was made to me, because it was a very ambitious task I was setting for myself. But I chose to do everything I could not to I used that to frame the parameters of what we were trying to change. So the options were specified to me on the basis of, of being to do something that was workable so that council ministers could be fully involved at the forthcoming council ministers meeting, so that we could meet the Timwell members' expectation and we wouldn't be in any way upsetting the budget. So the crucial point that you should all hear and the public should hear is that this, this budget was the budget that was worked on, for 6 months the previous year. I made it very clear that capital priorities, expenditure priorities, the basics of what had been set had been carefully thought through over that time, and we weren't upsetting that. I already answered to you, the sorts of areas that I cared about, particularly in terms of changes, and that. So in a sense, the way I specified the question was something along the lines of, what possibilities are there to change the personal tax allowance. Obviously, take into account that the package that you'd envisaged is not happening anymore. There wasn't going to be the National Insurance Youth Initiative and the other measures that have been floated to Timwell members in the Brawl Suite. What can we do? And pleased to talk with you about that more.
So, in terms of the time you had, it wasn't a massive restriction. You were able to bring in most of the items that you thought were priorities, and you weren't feeling frustrated that, given you'd only hours rather than months, it wasn't really a Thomas budget.
Well, clearly it's not. I mean, the great thing about any good Treasury department, and I have the privilege now to be heading a good Treasury department, is it's a very careful, considerate process. It starts by making sure that the departments and the other spending entities identify their spending priorities, working out what that collectively involves. Capital priorities, we have a very good project development fund process. We have capital constraints, as you'd expect. We have a process to prioritise and the capital projects. That had already been gone through. It would be nobody other than an experienced politician could understand and accept so readily that you're not going to. I'm not questioning that basic 6 month process of putting together a budget that had already been to council ministers once. It was simply the fact that the local economy strategy had gone off track slightly and needed to be brought back on track, firstly, and secondly, the personal allowances had fallen behind where they should be in terms of inflation, and there was a political feeling that Tim would have ultimately agreed with, which is that the personal tax allowance was a good approach to take to where we were in terms of economic activity.
So you got what you wanted?
I was very impressed with what the officers managed to do in the time that we had available. I think I helped them. I don't know, they can contradict me if they want, but I think I helped them by laying out and specifying the constraints, the parameters in which we were operating. I ruled out, in any sense, tearing up the good work. We weren't going back to revisit capital bids process. We weren't going back to revisit the revenue bid process. We were funding what we'd already agreed to inside council ministers. As I said to you, I've given you the complete emphasis of the constraints and parameters under which my changes operated. Because basically, the issue was adding a degree of confidence to encourage better acceptance of where we are in society, and to encourage and stimulate investment because of business confidence, and to basically make jobs and futures of people more secure. Anything you want to add?
I can give the committee a more detail on the timeline. Obviously, it was quite a busy time. I think in terms of what the minister said, in terms of the instructions to us, they were pretty much primarily around the personal allowance. We spent the next week or so bringing the minister up to speed with what happened in the last 6 months or so, because it's quite an ask, really, to come in pretty cold from the outside and then be required to go and stand in front of members and present the budget. So it was a very busy time for us, not so much in terms of working out how we could respond to the policy requests, but in terms of making sure that what had happened before was fully appreciated and understood.
There's been more time after the budget than before the budget. In the time you've had to reflect on the things that you feel should have gone into that budget that could have made a difference, or things that were kind of in the background that really should have been in the forefront of that budget?
So I've been asked that question in the run-up to the budget, during the budget, and after the budget, and you know, my answer's still the same, which is within a day or so of taking up the challenge. I did stress that there was a period beyond the budget. I would have voted for the expenditure and capital constraints even if I hadn't been Treasury Minister, but the budget is better because of the personal tax allowance and minimum wage changes that were made during January and February 2026. And in fact, it would have been better if personal tax allowance had kept had increased in line with inflation earlier, and it would have been better if the input from people like the Minimum Wage Committee had been heard earlier.
What was the Treasury's justification for increasing the projected structural deficit by 50% this year?
So do you mean that the budgeted structural deficit in 25-26 was 86.8 million, and then in the budgeted structural deficit and thing is 50% more? That is that what you mean by your question? Well, obviously the point I made in my budget speech was that the budget is different from the from the outcome. So we've got the actual structural deficits 21 through to 25. So 21-22 budgeted 128.5, actual 95.6. 22-23 budgeted 97.4, outcome 94.2. 23-24 budgeted 152.9, outcome 103.1. 24-25 budgeted 89.7, outcome 10.7. So that's a huge drop, and that's the point I made in my budget speech. And in the budget period, we were pretty certain, and we're more certain now, that the structural deficit is only 72.5 million in 25-26 compared to a budgeted one of 86.8. So the structural deficit, you know, is budgeted to go up. I've made my case in terms of economic factors. And we have a 5-year plan to reduce that structural deficit. And full play to you, Mr. Mercer. You did talk about this in your budget speech. It was the most important thing to you, and you decided, you know, to vote against the budget. And it is incredibly important that we manage both the reserves position and the structural deficit position. They're both very, very important issues for Treasury, as I know they are for you, because it determined your voting decision.
So the working assumption is that figures in the budget are already wrong and overinflated.
The history from the last 5 years is that the outcome is great, is much better position than the budgeted figure, because we are naturally conservative and you know.
Yeah, I don't think there's any their estimates and their plan. So I don't think they're right or wrong. They're reflective. So when you look at any of the forecasting that's in the budget moving forward, is it a forecast? No, it isn't a forecast. It's a plan. There's a plan in there in terms of the alignment of medium-term financial strategy to control expenditure so that expenditure grows more slowly than income. So it's not like if you were to forecast and say what would actually happen without any controls in there, you'd have a different figure now. So it's a plan. But there's definitely the degree of prudency in there. One of the things that impacts on the structural deficit quite significantly is the amount that we spend on capital. As capital obviously comes out, reserves impacts on the amount of money we take. We haven't delivered anywhere near our targets in capital for the last few years. That has an impact. If we don't use all of the fund draws from particular areas, that has an impact as well. So you can see in this current year's budget that the presentation of the structural deficit has changed slightly to try and identify show as well. So the structural deficit on page 13 of the budget in 26-27 shows the overall surplus and interest 27 million. But if you go up a line, it shows you without the national insurance to try and show the impact on the usable reserves. So hopefully that's more transparent. But it does. It's not that they're inaccurate. They're just reflective of a different plan.
And this is the place to talk about this, if you don't mind, Chair. But, you know, in fact, one of the things that happened as a result of a budget being slightly changed is we didn't do the NI youth proposal, and including national insurance, that improved the structural deficit position, because that would have been that would have been income foregone. That's correct. So it's not major. I'm not majoring on it, but the structural deficit, you know, it depends on which way you look at it and how you define it.
And I say very simply, there's lots of ways of doing it. Very simply, our plan is to grow income quicker than expenditure, to suppress expenditure, and that's the way we see. If you look at the table there, you'll see that we get to a positive position in the funds and excluding the NI by the end of the period. So that is the plan. The plan is to slowly, I guess that's been the MTFS for the last 10 years, slowly allow these to come together. So that is the plan still.
And just to give you an example, if you don't mind, Chair, you know, none of you, I don't think, have the privilege to hear me speak about every 6 hours like I was doing after the budget and the three or four days. But what was striking, apparently, when you heard me, was how I had it in for the Manx Care Board. People kept saying to me, "You were really making the Manx Care Board hear you that, you know, they're responsible for making sure they stick within the 404 million mandate amount." And I couldn't help but notice that the Manx Care Board has made a commitment to stick in public, to stick within the mandate, and that's quite a significant amount because that's quite a large proportion of the of the budget. And I do believe that myself, the healthcare minister, and the Manx Care Board are now, you know, understand that politicians need to hear that as well, you know, which that has consequences and that has implications, and we're already working through some of them since the budget was passed. So that was one of the slides that we included in the post-budget round of presentations. So we wanted to show everybody, and it stuck home because a lot of people commented on it, that income has gone up, infrastructure's expenditure has been flat, education's gone up a little bit, but it really is healthcare that's taken out all of the income growth. So that was just a colour that I provided when I had slides and could do it in a more interactive way, and it really was striking when you do it. And the second point, just to make, to give you some colour, Mr Mercer, is that the Public Sector Pensions Authority, the second largest increase is on the superannuation because of the way that the cost envelope and the cost sharing has been settled this last time, and we will be making sure that you understand at the PSPA that that's an important issue, because there are consequences of any change that you make. There are consequences of what happens, and if you look at the accounts, it's quite clear that the second largest growing amount is the superannuation amount because of the way that you've agreed and structured, and Tim would approve the settlement.
Mr. Morris.
Yeah, I'm a lot concerned that this government's actually taken £500 million from reserves to actually deal with ongoing spending, and it just seems to be kind of an accepted thing. And also the way in which we've got this kind of belief that spending is slowing down, sort of, but revenue's going up, sort of, and everything will be fine. I think we've heard previously from other Treasury ministers more specific things in terms of action is being taken to look at spending, to bring spending down. Are you simply happy that it will all be sorted in the future? Are you actually taking action? Is anything been happening with regard to spending?
So can you just give me the figure again? What figure did you say had been taken down from reserve?
£500 million.
Well, you have to remember that figure, you know, the public misunderstand. One of the other big things in the week after the budget itself was the focus on, there's two ways that reserves can be looked at. One is using the investment returns on the reserves and spending those. The other one is taking money out of the reserves. So Minister Ashford in the budget itself made it very clear that the drawdown on the reserves itself had been less than budgeted each year in recent years, and the reserves have been growing in those years. Talking in preparation for this, you know, a large part of the National Insurance Fund is investment returns over the years and decades, in fact. So you've got to remember that using the investment returns is not the same thing as drawing down the reserves, and that shows up clearly, and the public should hear this, that the reserves have actually been growing. So 500 million is a sort of opportunity cost, includes the opportunity cost of not keeping the investment returns in there, as well as actually drawing down the reserves. So your work was very good in the Economic Policy Review Committee, but we need to make sure that the public understand that as well. You know, the investment returns, you know, the real value of the reserves will be affected by not keeping the investment returns in the reserves, but the nominal value can be preserved, and that's what Minister Ashford kindly explained at the end of the budget debate. The second point is, I'm very sorry, but I just didn't hear the same thing as you, what you present back to me in terms of not taking action on expenditure. I think I was very clear that for the first time Manx Care Board has accepted that that's their limit. We've written to them stating exactly what we understand can be eligible to the eligible for contingency in advance. Obviously, contingencies by their very nature can surprise us, but we've been incredibly clear the priority-based budgeting will be helpful to the next administration. That's something that hasn't got close to completion before. All sorts of things are very, very specific, actions to impact the expenditure.
The budget is predicated on the basis of sort of steady state and sort of staff numbers, then, is it? In terms of, it's not the budget has not been designed with a growth in staff numbers built into it.
I think that's been
the case for the last couple of years, hasn't it? The budget's sort of based on a sort of steady state.
Pretty much, yeah.
But that hasn't been the reality, has it? I mean, the public service has grown quite considerably over the last 4 years, and that's been quite a challenge.
So it's down. I guess where has that growth been seen? That growth has been seen, I'm incorrect, I think I'm right, it's been mainly in health. So health obviously has a different uplift, has its own funding formula. I should remind the committee is 2 or whatever, where the CPI is plus 3.03%. Which allows a greater growth as well, and there may well have been within the departments as well to cope a movement between pay and non-pay as well, more towards pay.
I think we've heard a lot of sort of political noise about the headcount and the number of public servants that we have. There's been I think the Chief Minister's been trumpeting the call for a smaller public service, but other than producing a quarterly report, it seems that there's not an awful lot being done about curbing the growth in numbers, but it seems that the budget certainly has sort of tried to encourage that by at least sort of ignoring that it's happening.
Is that a political question?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, I don't think so. Essentially, for all departments except for healthcare and the payroll assumption is lower than inflation, and the stress has always been that everything that happens outside that is for departments to fund. So I'll give you an example so that people hear that it's a bit tougher now than perhaps it has been in the past, because I can only speak for where we are now, which is that if you make agreements to do above budgeted pay, expect consequences. It's not automatic that you can then get that from the contingency fund, and I've got live cases like that now, so people should hear that it's serious. If you want to pay people more, you in one sense you have to have more greater productivity in the public sector. So that's a serious message, and it's a live issue, so I can't go into it too much, and it's in various places, so it's not only in one place, but essentially part of the attempt to preserve reserves, to start maintaining their real value by keeping some of the investment returns in the reserves, particularly for national insurance and for a rainy day inside the reserve fund, and also to begin to reduce the structural deficit really this time. We want people to hear that seriously, that if you make decisions about pay that are beyond what you budgeted, sort it out.
What is your assessment of the sustainability of the NI fund?
Well, I think it's well documented, and there's been several debates in both houses on it. So the latest report we have, obviously, is the 2022 Government Actuaries Report. And that forecasts that if we do nothing, basically the fund that underpins the operation of the scheme runs out in 2047, 48. So in that sense, it is not sustainable. We have, as part of the previous Treasury Minister's debates that he was having with the public and obviously Tynwald members, the government actually did some further modelling work for us, looking at some options. And when they did that, they actually took into account the significant increases there'd been in the state pension. And it's actually now moved the exhaustion date forward by 2 years. So we're now looking at an exhaustion date of 2045, 46. the pressures on it are well documented. You know, we have the triple lock, which there doesn't seem to be a single article that's ever produced at the moment that says the triple lock is sustainable. The OECD have recently come out with a report on it. Someone told me the other day that Private Eye even did something on it that forecast that in so many years' time it will actually be 100% of UK GDP. It's a bit sensationalist, yes, but it gives you an indication of it, the significant cost in it. And the problem you have with the triple lock is the double positive it gives for pensioners. So to give an example, we had in 2023, so from it was the 23-24 increase was 10.1%, and that was predicated on the fact that the previous September CPI was 10.1%, because we've been going through that high. Now at that time, earnings only increased by 5.5%. So given the triple lock formula, that was the higher amount, that's what individuals got. The following year, earnings catches up. So we then had an increase of 8.5%, because that was what earnings were done. So that was, if you look at normal economics, that's employees then catching their salaries back up with inflation. Pensioners also then got that 8.5%. So they had significant increases over 2 years, whereas employees, the people who are paying for this, and employers, they were seeing only a small increase or a lower increase in their earnings. There's no getting away from it. It has increased the state pension. It has, helped with pensioner poverty, but it has come at a cost.
That was highlights of the recent Public Accounts Committee public hearing with the Treasury Minister and some of his officers. So what do you think? Has Chris Thomas's appointment made things better or worse for the Manx public? It's certainly a tough role for whoever takes it on, and never more important to make the right calls. For now, I'm Phil Gorn. Goramayos and Geisakrom. Thanks for listening.